I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome back to Radio Times. The Republican presidential primary was a contentious contest, and now the race between President Obama and Governor Romney is shaping up to be a protracted and negative campaign, and there are 3 months to go. The latest flap involves Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid accusing Romney from the floor of the Senate of not paying a decade worth of taxes. Here's what Reid said.
He's refused to release his tax returns, as we know. If a person coming before this body wanted to be a cabinet officer, he couldn't be if he had he did the same refusal Mitt Romney does about tax returns. So the word's out that he hasn't paid any taxes for 10 years. Let him prove that he has paid taxes, because he hasn't. We already know from one partial tax return that he gave us, he has money hidden in Bermuda, the Cayman Islands, and a Swiss bank account. Not making that up, that's in the partial year that he gave us. Mitt Romney makes more money in a single day than the average middle-class family makes in 2 years.
On Sunday, Republican National Committee Chairman Rince Priebus shot back on This Week with George Stephanopoulos.
And as far as Harry Reid is concerned, listen, I know you might want to go down that road. I'm not going to respond to a dirty liar who hasn't filed a single page of tax returns himself, complains about people with money, but lives in the Ritz-Carlton here down the street. So if that's on the agenda, I'm not going to go there. This is just a made-up issue, and the fact that we're going to spend any time talking about it is
You say you're
just
not going to
respond,
but you just called him a dirty liar. You stand by that? You think Harry Reid's a dirty liar?
I just said it.
Well, politics isn't for the faint of heart, but it has gotten perhaps too negative and too nasty. And how do you know what's fact from fiction? And we have two guests who have joined us who spend a lot of time looking at separating fact from fiction. Eugene Kiley is a journalist. He's covered government and politics for more than 20 years. He's currently deputy director of factcheck.org and joins us here in our Philadelphia studios. And Eugene Kiley, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
We're happy to have you here. And on the telephone is Lori Robertson. She's a managing editor for factcheck.org and was a journalist who covered the media for about 9 years as an editor and writer for American Journalism Review. And Lori Robertson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And Lori, let me begin with you and even just listening to those two comments, one from Harry Reid and one from Rince Priebus. Is this the state of politics that we're living in today?
Well, I guess it is. You know, with the Reid comment, it's just an unsubstantiated claim, and Reid has offered no proof whatsoever. Our approach at factcheck.org is always that the burden is on the person making the claim to back it up, and in this case, he has obviously failed to do so. And then with the previous response, I mean, at that point, we're just getting into political name-calling, and we can't fact-check the name-calling. But again, the burden of proof on this is on Reid to back up his claims.
Well, Eugene, let me go back to you and then perhaps help us understand how fact-check works. And both of you have worked as journalists. Do you bring the kind of skill set of journalism to the kind of work you do at fact-check?
Oh, absolutely. What we do is look, first of all, at any claims that are made, usually in TV ads at this time, and debates and speeches by the two candidates, and look for facts that can be checked, and then start to look at the primary sources of information, at some of the organizations that keep information on taxes and unemployment and some of the issues that were being discussed. So we're looking at primary sources from nonpartisan organizations like the Bureau of Labor Statistics, CBO, GAO, and some of the organizations that are responsible for providing policymakers with the information they need to make intelligent decisions.
The word fact is important. It's not an opinion. It's not an accusation.
Correct.
You're looking at what someone says in terms of this is a fact coming from them.
Right. For example, with stimulus, if a Republican says the stimulus has failed, well, that's an opinion. We're not going to fact check that. But if someone says that the stimulus hasn't created any jobs, which was a claim that was made in 2010 by many of the congressional candidates who were running for the Republicans, well, that can be disproven by reports by the Congressional Budget Office that show exactly, or not exactly, ranges of how many jobs that have been created as a result of the stimulus.
Lori, do negative campaigns lead to more, if not lies, misrepresentations, exaggerations?
It certainly seems so. I think when a lot of positive, kind of happy, fluffy ads, we often don't find anything necessarily wrong with them. But when you see a negative ad and an attack on a candidate, we're more likely to find something that's false. Another thing voters may not realize is that when campaigns and these outside groups put out an ad, they also come up with a backup or support, and that's something that often we ask for. It's one of the first things we do when we're fact-checking. Give us the support for that ad, and they'll have written out each claim in the ad, and then, what they say is the support, whether it's reports or news articles. Often we can dig up those news articles and find that, oh, they're taking this quote out of context, and the support that they claim backs up what they're saying doesn't actually back it up at all.
Would you say, Eugene, with so much money sloshing around the system, and it's not just the candidates, it's not just the parties, now we have these super PACs and we have these nonprofits that are also spending money, a lot of it showing up in TV ads, that sort of adds not just to the negativity, but just the sort of relentlessness of the campaign so far?
Well, I think it adds to both the relentlessness and the negativity, because when you have these third-party groups, they give the candidates some deniability, so they're not the ones making these outlandish claims. It's another group that has nothing to do with the campaign, although some of these groups are created and funded by folks who have in the past supported the very candidates that they say they have nothing to do with.
And give us an example of one of those groups.
Well, in two cases, on the Democratic side, there's Priorities USA Action, which was formed by two White House ex-White House staffers, and they're running ads in support of President Obama. And then on the other side, Restore Our Future is an organization that was founded by veterans of Mitt Romney's 2008 political campaign for president. And that group is being funded by the same people who support Romney.
And these are the ads where you don't see the candidate at the end saying, I'm so-and-so and I approve this ad.
Correct.
Which makes it maybe, are those harder to vet just because of the complex system?
No. It's no more difficult than any other political ad.
I was reading an essay, I think I saw your name attached to it, Eugene, which was looking at this current race and comparing it to the Bush-Dukakis race. You see some parallels there?
Well, Brooks Jackson, our founder, was primarily the author on that piece, and that was a look at what we've seen so far in the political campaign. We called it the Whoppers edition, which is something that we usually don't do until late August, early September. This year we did it in early July. Right. Both Brooks and Kathleen Hall Jamison, the director of the Annenberg Public Policy Center, have talked about how this particular campaign seems to be nastier and less facts-based than past.
Mm-hmm. And it seems also fast-paced, and I'll put this to you, Lori, and I don't know whether candidates learn from John Kerry and the quote-unquote swift boating of John Kerry 4 years ago, where his campaign didn't respond immediately to these accusations about his war experience, and now whether campaigns feel like they have to fight back or counter charge when they're accused of something.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't done any kind of study on how quickly our campaigns are responding these days, but it certainly does feel like there's an accusation, there's an immediate response. We're certainly seeing a lot of that. One ad, will come out and make an accusation, and then you'll see another ad countering that.
And Eugene, you want to add to that at all?
Well, yeah, there are these rapid response groups within each campaign that's responsible for doing that. Sometimes they're not as rapid or as responsive as you would think, like with this claim or the statement that President Obama had made about you didn't build that which turned out to be numerous web ads and TV ads. The Obama campaign was very slow to respond to that.
Well, in fact, let's play a portion of the ad, and this is an ad by a super PAC supporting Romney, in which President Obama is heard telling business owners, you didn't build that. Let's listen to a portion of that ad.
People who've worked hard, started a business, and created jobs can't believe what President Obama is saying about them.
If you got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
Oh.
Unbelievable.
What an insult.
I am outraged. I can't believe he just said that.
I can't believe the President of the United States could say that I have not made this.
The government had practically nothing to do with it. If anything, government gets in our way.
We've worked for everything.
And again, that's a portion of that ad. Let's go back to a portion of President Obama's original comments. Let's listen.
If you were successful, somebody along the line gave you some help. There was a great teacher somewhere in your life. Somebody helped to create this unbelievable American system that we had that allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
So, Eugene, if something is taken out of context, is that a, I don't want to use the word lie, but is that fiction, if not fact?
Well, in that particular segment there, you could have run two entirely different ads doing the same exact thing, just taking a snippet of that speech. We heard the Republican version of that, which is, you know, you didn't build that. But later on in that speech, the president summarizes what his point is, and he says the point is that when we succeed because of our individual initiative, but also because we do things together, which accurately summarizes what he was saying there. So you could easily run an ad that said, we succeed because of our individual initiative, and just take that little quote, and that's it. But the point here was that there are others who help you, and in particular, the point that the president was making was that government is helping you. And now that is a legitimate, you know, ground for discussion and debate about how much government should help and who pays for it and all that. But we skipped through that and went right to the kind of the more guttural kind of response that you would that is going to get people upset and angry.
Laurie, we're almost up in a break. Is there anything unusual about taking things out of context?
No, not at all. I mean, that's something that we find so often. And a lot of times, you know, it's the candidate's words taken out of context or a newspaper's words taken out of context. We see that a lot in ads where they'll say, oh, the Washington Post or the New York Times, and they'll flash a quote, and it really supports their point. But if you go back and you look at that full article, the full sentence actually said something quite different.
And that's Laurie Robertson. She's a journalist, and she's also managing editor of factcheck.org. Also with us is deputy director of factcheck.org, Eugene Kiley. He's also a journalist, and both of them joining us today in Radio Times to talk about the campaigns and what campaigns say, what surrogates say, what candidates say. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Folk Festival proudly supports WHYY. This year's Folk Festival features Little Feat, John Hyatt and the Combo, Steve Earle and the Dukes, Trombone Shorty and Orleans Avenue, Lucinda Williams, Mike Cross, Mary Chapin Carpenter, and more at the Old Pool Farm near Schwanksville in Upper Salford Township, August 17th through the 19th. For a weekend of concerts, crafts, camping, and children's activities, the Philadelphia Folk Festival, 800-556-FOLK or folkfest.org.
Next time in Studio 360, Woody Boyd was a bartender with dreams of making it in the theater.
Miss Howe, this is my golden chance. I have to do this. Don't you understand? I just gotta do it. I just gotta.
25 years later, the real Woody is taking on a new role, playwright. Woody Harrelson talks about his off-Broadway show. Next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
Many football players are already hard at work preparing for another season of tough hits and tackles. Meanwhile, experts are increasingly concerned that the game itself is putting athletes at risk.
the cumulative effect of too many blows to the head can contribute to this disease.
In a special broadcast, we'll hear from experts, athletes, and parents about playing football and staying healthy. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, talking with two people who work for factcheck.org and their mission statement. I'll quote it here. We are a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aims to reduce the level of deception and confusion in U.S. politics. We monitor the factual accuracy of what is said by major U.S. political players in the forms of TV ads, debate speeches, interviews, and news releases. And our guests are Eugene Kaiser, and also joining us is Lori Robertson. And we have some open lines at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Eugene, going back to you, you mentioned, and I think both you and Lori mentioned, the fact that when you do your work, you go first to the person who says what it is that you are fact-checking to find out, what did you mean? Where did you get this information from? How did you vet the information that came to you?
Correct. Yeah, that's what we have to do, or else we'll spend way too much time trying to figure out what it is that they meant.
And Lori, is that hard to do? Are people who speak, are they willing to share with you where they got their information?
For the most part, yes. I think sometimes we do have a little more trouble finding a contact person or getting a response from some of the outside groups, particularly the ones that are lesser known, but you know, we normally get a response from the campaigns relatively quickly on the claim.
And Lori, why do you think Mitt Romney's tax returns have become such a big issue in the campaign so far?
Well, you know, I guess it certainly fits the message that the Obama campaign has been using, has been trying to make. You know, one thing that we did look at, Mitt Romney, he does say that he's following the precedent of John McCain by releasing just 2 years of tax returns. But we looked at that, and McCain was actually the exception, not the rule, when it comes to releasing those returns. In more than three decades, we didn't find any other nominee for either party that's released fewer than 5 years' worth of returns.
And his father released about a dozen years, as I understand
correct.
It. Do you want to add to that, Eugene, just in terms of, you know, why this issue, and it's obviously being pushed very hard by the Democrats?
Well, it's being pushed very hard for a bunch of reasons, and as Lori had mentioned, it fits into the message that the Obama campaign wants to put forward. But also, you know, any day that Mitt Romney's talking about his taxes and how wealthy he is a day, you know, a news cycle that the Republicans have lost. And that's part of what the game that's going on here, too.
Well, and I also noticed a piece on Fact Check, which is looking at overall tax rates in this country are at something like a 30-year low.
Yes. Yeah, both at up and down the scale, both the poor and the wealthy.
Are paying just less taxes today than
as a percentage of their income, yeah.
Right. Laura, you want to add to that?
Well, you know, I think what Eugene has said is correct, and, you know, this is just the message that we're going to keep seeing from the Obama campaign, and it takes focus off of the unemployment rate and so many other things. If they can focus on Mitt Romney's wealth and just keep hammering away on asking him to release more years of his tax returns.
Which I guess underscores why Harry Reid is doing what he's doing.
And there is a legitimate debate to be had here, as you just mentioned. The amount of taxes as a percentage of income that's being paid is low, historic lows. And why is that? We can be having that discussion, and should that change? But you know, we're not. We're having a discussion over Mitt Romney's personal finances.
But do you see that as maybe this is more opinion than you want to give, but that we're caught up in trivialities as opposed to some of these larger, not just issues, but problems that the country is facing?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And that was, we don't opine much, but that was one of the conclusions that we had drawn from the Whopper piece that we had posted that summarized what's going on in this campaign so far, and that was the comparison to the 1988 campaign with the first President Bush, and Dukakis riding around in a tank, and the whole Willie Horton ad. You know, it's that kind of level of discussion that we've gotten to with this campaign.
And just to underscore that, meanwhile, the SNL crisis was brewing, right?
Exactly.
Laurie, do you see it that way?
Yes, and as Eugene said, we don't really give our opinion, but I think we've often said in articles, there's a valid point to be made or a valid argument to be had about whatever the particular issue is, but instead voters are getting spin or a misleading or false soundbite instead of an opportunity to know the facts and have a conversation about a perfectly valid issue.
But how much do you think that the news media and perhaps even the cable news media, how much responsibility do you think that they bear for focusing in on the horse race, on the scandal or the crisis or the faux pas du jour, Lori?
Well, there's definitely a responsibility to. There's always going to be coverage of the horse race. It's an election, it's a race, but there's obviously some responsibility to look at the issues and push the candidates to talk about and respond to questions on the issues. We do think we've seen much more of the type of work we do in the last couple of election cycles, a lot more fact-checking and holding politicians accountable for what they say. And, of course, we think that that's a good thing and hopefully at least helping voters see through the spin and see what the facts are.
Well, and that's why you're both here, because we appreciate what you do as well. And again, that's Laurie Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org. With us here in our Philadelphia studios is Eugene Kiley, deputy director of FactCheck.org. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We're going to play some more ads a little bit later in the hour as well. Let's see what Andrew from Center City, Philadelphia has to say. And Andrew, go ahead, you're on radio time.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Listen, earlier on, one of their guests had mentioned that a politician had said that the stimulus did not prove, help
Great
employment,
job.
And that was found to be false. And I'd be curious as to how anybody would know that's false. That's a matter of opinion. There's lots of opinions out there on whether the stimulus was net beneficial or net detrimental. And since there's no way to control the experiment, I don't see how there's any way to know the answer one way or the other. It's an opinion either way.
Well, let me give Eugene Kiley a chance to respond, Andrew. Thanks for the call.
In that case, what we did was go to the Congressional Budget Office, which is a nonpartisan research agency for Congress that helps Congress with these kinds of policy decisions on what's effective and what's not. And what they had determined was that it did have an impact on GDP, it had an impact on the number of jobs that were created, and that the unemployment rate would have been higher if not for the stimulus. Now, you could make an argument that it didn't do enough,
or you don't like it.
Yeah, it could have been spent differently. Whatever arguments you want to make about it, that's fine. But you can't say it didn't create any jobs, and that's exactly what the Republicans were saying in 2010. At least some of them.
And you find the CBO to be a reliable source to turn to?
Absolutely. Yeah, they're one of the organizations that we're constantly pouring through their documents, because it's fact based research by nonpartisan. Researchers. It's a terrific source.
Laurie, you want to add to that?
Sure. You'll find, I know the CBO gets criticism when it says things that one party or the other doesn't like, but both parties have constantly cited the CBO's results, and they're not offering opinion, they're just looking at the facts. And looking at how legislation, what effect legislation would have or did have in the case of the stimulus.
Thanks for calling into Radio Times, Andrew. You can call as well, 1-888-477-9499. We are talking about how to tell fact from fiction in this, what has turned out to be a rather negative and nasty campaign. Again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Let me play another ad, and this is an ad that Fact Checked has looked at, and this is a Mitt Romney ad touting his record as governor of Massachusetts. Let's listen.
Mitt Romney on day one. The difference is strong leadership. As governor of Massachusetts, Mitt Romney had the best jobs record in a decade. Romney reduced unemployment to just 4.7%. He balanced every budget without raising taxes. He did it by bringing parties together to cut through gridlock. From day one as president, Mitt Romney's strong leadership will make all the difference on jobs.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Eugene, true, not true?
Well, this is a textbook example of spinning jobs data. There are true statements that are made in there, but we need to provide the context so people can better understand what it is that Romney did as governor on jobs. He says, for example, that he reduced unemployment to just 4.7%. And that's correct. When he took office, it was 5.6, and when he left office, it was 4.7. However, that was a time where of relative a strong economy, and in fact, the state rate was lower than the national rate when he took office, and when he left, it was about the same as the national office. So relative to the U.S. national rate, it did not perform as well. And not only that, but he didn't also perform as well as the states. During that time period, there were 49,000, roughly 49,000 jobs that were created in his 4 years, a 1.5% increase. Well, that would rank Massachusetts 47th out of the 50 states in terms of job growth. So while 4.7% seems very good right now, at a time when the unemployment rate is 8.3%, you have to understand the context of the times that we were dealing with then.
You know, Laurie, just hearing Eugene deconstruct that ad, I'm thinking of, you know, the regular person who doesn't have time to do all the research that you do, and you hear an ad and you decide whether you believe it or not, or whether it speaks to you or not. It's there just seems to be such a disconnect, if you know what I mean.
Oh yeah, and I mean that's definitely I guess a disadvantage for us. It's pretty easy to state something that's false or misleading in a nice little, you know, one sentence or 10-word soundbite. And when we go back and explain, okay, here's why this is wrong, it takes us, you know, at least several sentences, if not a couple of paragraphs. And that's, you know, and you'll see the ad over and over and over again. We may debunk these claims at least a few times if we keep seeing them in ad after ad, but obviously you'll see the ad a lot more than you'll see our fact check.
Laurie, I was sharing a fantasy I have with Eugene that when a candidate is giving a speech or if they're in a debate, wouldn't it be great to do real-time fact-checking where you could have a crawl? I realize I live in a fantasy world here, but that would be so helpful.
Yeah, I mean, we have found that real-time fact-checking is not easy and could actually create some problems. You know, if it's a claim that we've checked before, we can often fairly quickly, you know, say that, okay, this is wrong. But if it's something that we haven't looked at, you know, we're pretty careful about what we say, and it takes us a little bit of time to look into that, and you know, we then fact check our own work to make sure that we got everything right before we post something. So, you know, when we went through the debates during the primary and this fall when we see the presidential debates, we'll try to get stuff up as quickly as we can. But you know, our primary focus is making sure we get it right before we get it up quickly.
How shocking is that?
Yeah.
Exactly. Go ahead, Eugene.
And this is an example right here. I mean, if you were fact-checking this live, 4.7%, well, yeah, that was the Massachusetts rate, so you might be quick to say that's true, but then you have to look at it in the context. And they're similar on the Obama side. It's the same kind of thing that that he's been doing lately with the jobs numbers, where he's picking a certain time period to look at the job growth that we've had. You know, if he goes back to February of 2010 to say from since then, we've created 4.5 million jobs. Well, that's true, but since the beginning of his presidency, the nation's lost something in the area of 500,000.
Mm. Let me get Al from Mantua to join us. Al, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello, Marty.
Hi there.
I get quite a few emails, and most of them seem to be anti-progressive. And I'm wondering if they have, I don't get any that are anti-conservative. Can your guest tell us a ratio between progressive to conservative?
Are these coming from the parties? Are they coming from organizations? Where are they coming from?
Usually from friends.
Oh, from friends. Well, maybe that tells us something about your friends.
Yeah, perhaps so. But can they tell us if there is a ratio of one side to the other?
Yeah, well, go ahead, Eugene.
I think what that's a reflection of is who's in power. Right now you have a Democratic president, and up until 2010, there was also the Democrats controlling both the House and the Senate. So there was more of a motivation for the people who are of a more conservative bent to spread this kind of disinformation. I think that's more of a reflection of it than whether one side is more does this more often than the other.
Who's in power, I guess, and who wants to get in power.
Exactly.
Laura, you want to add to that?
Sure. You know, I actually wrote a piece during the last presidential election about these viral claims, and, you know, the bottom line of my piece was just delete these things when they come to your inbox. They are overwhelmingly false and misleading. It's very rare that we find a viral email or a chain email, as we like to call them, that is true. So, you know, and we see the same ones over and over again. Some of these things, they just go on for years and years and years, continuing to make just completely bogus claims. So, you know, my advice, just approach these things with extreme skepticism. And if you're looking for an answer on whether or not some of these viral emails are correct, we've addressed a lot of them in a feature that we call Ask Fact Check. It's what readers ask us a lot about. So check our website and do a search, and you might find that we've debunked that email for you.
Well, in fact, we're going to take a very short break, and I have in my hand your viral spiral, and I want to read a couple of these viral emails that you can fact check for us on the air. But first, a quick reintroduction. That's Lori Robertson, and she is managing editor of factcheck.org. Also with us is Eugene Kiley, deputy director of factcheck.org. Both of them joining us today in Radio Times to talk about what candidates and their surrogates are saying, and they take their time, but they do research and try to figure out if what we are being told is true or not. A couple open lines at 1-888-477-9499. We're going to play another clip as well. Stay with us. Give us a call, 1-888-477-WHYY. We'll be right back.
The National Museum of American Jewish History at 5th and Market supports WHYY and presents a new exhibit to Bigotry No Sanction, George Washington and Religious Freedom, featuring original letters written by Washington to the Jewish community of Newport and the Quaker, Lutheran, Roman Catholic, and other communities, confirming the country's commitment to religious freedom. Also on view is an early printing of the Declaration of Independence and the first public printing of the U.S. Constitution. 215-923-3811 or nmajh.org.
On the next Fresh Air, America at War with Itself. We talk with historian Richard Slotkin, author of The Long Road to Antietam, How the Civil War Became a Revolution. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Do you know who runs your city's ambulance service, and why does it matter? Also, why isn't Afghanistan a topic in the presidential campaign? There's still a war going on there. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. The presidential campaign hasn't really officially started yet, but that hasn't stopped the candidates and their surrogates from lobbying charges and countercharges. It's been a nasty few months and will probably stay that way for the next few months before voters go to the polls. So how do you separate fact from fiction? How much are money and outside groups driving the political discourse? And why do trivial issues get so much play when the country faces such serious problems? We're talking about all of this with Eugene Kylie, Deputy Director of FactCheck.org, and Lori Robertson, Managing Editor of FactCheck.org, and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Lori, you mentioned some of these viral emails, and I'm looking at what you've got posted in the last, looks like, month or so. One of the viral emails: are Obama's early records sealed? What's the answer to that question?
The answer is no. You know, there are records that presidential candidates don't ordinarily release, and they may be confidential, but they're not sealed by any court. And we found there were 16 claims made in a graphic that keeps popping up in viral emails, and we found them to be mostly false or distorted.
Here's another one. Did Barack and Michelle Obama, quote-unquote, surrender their law licenses to avoid ethics charges?
Yeah, also a no. You know, we actually talked to a court official who confirmed that there weren't any kind of disciplinary proceedings, nothing like that, against the Obamas, but instead they voluntarily inactivated their licenses because they weren't practicing law, and by doing that, they avoid a requirement to take continuing education classes or pay annual fees. Both of them could practice law again if they want to do so.
And Laura, I'll give you one more. Did President Obama secretly sign a law that makes it a crime to protest against him or ask him a question he doesn't like?
Also, no. He did announce that he signed a bill that was overwhelmingly passed by Congress that revises a 1971 law against trespassing into areas under Secret Service protection. So another case of one of these viral emails just really twisting the truth.
And I noticed, Eugene, that you don't have in your current viral spiral anything about the president's birth certificate. You're done with that issue?
Yes, but you can find
even
it
even if
on
other people's aren't done, but you're done with it. Why is that?
Well, we're done with it because it's been proven false. He's released both the short form and the long form now. And we've vetted every different angle of this issue, and it's all available on our webpage and in our archives. So if people have any questions about it, we'll send them links to these many different articles that we have, but we're not going to write about it anymore.
Do you have a theory why this won't go away? And it's not the only, you know, conspiracy theory that's out there, but this one seems to have roots somehow.
Yeah, I have no idea. I just don't. I don't get it. I don't understand it.
Do you get it? Do you understand it, Laurie?
I don't know that I do get it or understand it either. But you know, I think we do find that if you're predisposed to believe something, a lot of people want to continue to believe that, despite, you know, whatever evidence you can throw at them. You know, we may have photographic evidence that something's false, and we'll still get emails from people saying, okay, yeah, but here's some other angle, and here's why I still think that that's true.
Do you think it sort of shows the difference between fact and feeling? That if someone believes something, it seems to be true even if the facts don't back them up, Laurie?
Well, I mean, there's something to cognitive dissonance that, you know, we tend to gravitate toward claims that support our beliefs, and we tend to shun information that, you know, goes against our beliefs or seemingly proves our beliefs wrong. And that's, you know, it's human nature.
Right.
So I think that lots of people are predisposed to react that way. And, you know, we try to give as much evidence and, as Eugene was saying at the beginning of our segment today, primary sources, and here's why this is the case, or these are the facts. And, you know, it's really up to our readers to evaluate that information.
I mean, do facts kind of pale in comparison to things like beliefs and feelings, Eugene?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's hard to persuade somebody who is not going to close their mind and not going to keep an open mind and look at the facts. But I think what we find a lot of people who come to our site are people who are keeping an open mind and mm-hmm. want to get the facts and appreciate what it is we're trying to do.
How competitive is it between various fact-check organizations?
It's not competitive at all, in fact.
Is it collaborative?
Yeah. Well, not collaborative, but we respect what they do. We'll cite their work if they've gotten to something before we did. And we'll give them credit when they do something particularly well done. At the end of a campaign cycle, there will often be conferences where the fact checkers will get together and discuss what happened in the last campaign. So it's more of a nice club than it is a than any competition.
And then competition. Let me see what Vince from Wynwood has to say. Vince, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. How
Hi
you
there.
Doing?
Good. How are you?
Great show. And
thank you.
Since Fact Check and other such organizations or sources are credible sources, what I'm wondering is, why don't someone who's attacked with big PAC money or something on a point, why don't they respond almost immediately by airing the opposition's claim and immediately air with it the fact-check response?
Mm. Well, they do.
It seems to me that would be an adequate way to deal with these issues.
Well, Vince, let me give Eugene a chance, and then we'll hear from Lori. Go ahead.
They often do exactly that. We're seeing that more and more. The problem for that for them, of course, is that for any one time that they're criticized or their point is supported by what we write, there'll be another time when a claim that they made would be debunked by us. So, you know, I don't think they don't go to that well as often as they as you think that they might. But they do it.
Lori, are you comfortable with the idea of a candidate using something that Fact Check said in one of their ads, for instance?
Well, as long as they get it right. you know, our ears definitely perk up when we see an ad that cites us because we've definitely found candidates misquoting us over the years. So, you know, that's something that we would immediately go back and look at, okay, what exactly is the ad saying and what did we say in our story to make sure that we're being represented properly. You know, the other thing I think you'll find candidates have their own kind of truth squads or fact-checking groups or person who does that sort of thing. So we'll find the candidates responding with their own fact-check of an attack. But the problem is we often find errors and misleading things in their, you know, supposed fact check of the attack on them.
Well, Laura, you should say, as you were talking, Eugene is shaking his head, no. Go ahead, Eugene.
Yeah, well, yeah, and that's become something that has only occurred probably in the last couple of campaign cycles where they create these, Obama has the truth team. Where they do videos and they have a whole page devoted website devoted to this, and it's just another way to spread misinformation. It's also another way to spin information in the most positive light. It's just another form of propaganda by the campaigns.
Well, let me play another ad, and this is an Obama ad citing Romney's position on abortion. Let's listen.
I've never felt this way before, but it's a scary time to be a woman. Mitt Romney is just so out of touch.
Mitt Romney opposes requiring insurance coverage for contraception, and Romney supports overturning Roe v. Wade. Romney backed a bill that outlaws all abortion, even in cases of rape and incest.
There's so much we need to do. We need to attack our problems, not a woman's choice.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
Lori, can you respond to what's fact and what's fiction in that?
Yeah, you know, this was one of the claims that we labeled a whopper so far in the campaign, and the claim we zeroed in on was this idea that Romney, quote, backed a bill that outlaws all abortion, even in cases of rape and incest. There was another ad from the Obama campaign that said he supported a law that did that. But the truth is there was no bill, there wasn't any law, and Romney's position throughout this campaign and the last is that he opposes abortion except in cases of rape, incest, or when the life of the mother is in danger. And what the Obama campaign is pointing to here is a hypothetical question from a 2007 debate. An audience member asked if Romney would sign legislation to ban all abortion if Roe v. Wade had been overturned. Romney gave this kind of long, rambling response, but eventually he said he'd be, quote, delighted to sign it if there was some kind of national consensus, but he said, quote, that's not where America is today. So, you know, he made clear both before and after that hypothetical question that he opposes abortion except in cases of rape, incest, and to save the life of the mother.
And I have to say, I also fact-checked that ad on some other organizations, and there seems to be consensus that this ad is false, Eugene.
I haven't done that, so I don't know what others are saying about it, but it's certainly, we've looked at it, and it certainly is false.
But what's interesting is when you look at these ads and look at your deconstruction of ads or comments that are made, sounds silly to say this, words matter, whether it's a law, whether it's a bill, whether, you know, someone expresses support, whether someone, appears with somebody, that all these sort of details of campaigning can make a difference between whether something is maybe true or not.
Oh, exactly. The precise wording of these ads is something that we take very seriously, and we will rate something as being misleading or false based on the way that it's worded. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we'll even say, if it was just tweaked a little bit and said this way, it would be perfectly fine.
And Lori, do you give anyone any, I'm not saying a pass, but if what someone says in conversation or maybe in an interview is different from what is written, scripted in an ad, do you see them as different or you have to hold them to the same standard?
Well, I mean, I think we'd have to look at each individual case. I think if it's clear from the context that they stumbled or they meant to say something else, we would certainly note that. And, you know, as we said before, we always go to the campaign and say, you know, what did the candidate mean by this? And we'll note the campaign's response. We try to approach this with some common sense, and we're not going to, you know, do gotcha journalism here, but we look, as Eugene said, very closely at exactly the way something was worded, and politicians are often very specific about the way they word a claim.
I'm looking at something. This is something posted in August from Fact Check. A conservative group misleads Kansas voters in campaign mailers that claim a failed proposal to amend the state's constitution would have allowed residents to opt out of Obamacare. This gets complicated because our healthcare system is complicated, but nonetheless, these mailers described as misleading. Eugene, can you add to that?
This was in a state house race between a primary and the Republican primary, and what they're talking about there is an amendment to the Kansas Constitution that would have would have given voters the right to opt out of the individual mandate. But as we pointed out, that there's no state law or amendment to the state constitution that trumps the federal law, and since that was upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court, it was rather a meaningless exercise that was going on. And some of the Republicans who voted against it said that it was this meaningless exercise that was going to waste taxpayer money by putting this on the ballot and all the cost that goes to that. And now they're being attacked for that. for not giving Kansas the ability to opt out of Obamacare.
Which they couldn't have done anyway.
They could not have done.
Right. Lori, you know, we're almost out of time here, but, you know, after doing an hour talking about all these misleading ads and comments and statements, is there any truth out there?
Yeah, I mean, there definitely is. We tend to focus almost exclusively on the false and misleading claims because, you know, there's so many of them. Right. We're not sure why we would also write about all the things that are true. But, you know, there definitely are things that are true. And as Eugene said earlier, there are a lot of claims that politicians make that, you know, just went a step or two or five too far. And if they had just, you know, they could have stuck with the facts to make their point. And we often say that in articles, if this politician had said such and such instead, that it would have been correct.
Correct and is critical?
You know, I guess that's right. A matter of opinion in a way. I mean, apparently they think that what they said was a better way to make their point. I can only, you know, guess. But often, you know, I find myself thinking, gosh, why didn't they just say X because that was true? And I think it makes their point just as well.
Well, words are important to them, too, and their focus grouping. They're doing focus groups of voters to find out what words are going to trigger responses that they want. So that's why they go for some of the over-the-top language.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you. Eugene Kiley, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times, Deputy Director of FactCheck.org. And Lori Robertson, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And she's managing editor of factcheck.org. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about this program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of the show. It's produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.